Okay, this is the Happy House Hunters. This is our mastermind group. And today we are talking about what is your biggest challenge at currently? And everybody in the group has a little bit of a different challenge. And so I'm in pretty good shape right now. Boy, over Christmas when the temperatures got down into the -9s and everybody was traveling for the holidays, things got, you know, really, really kind of tough there, because not only were the temperatures that cold, but no one was working. So how do you get some of those problems fixed? And I joked, you know, over the holidays that two of my biggest problems came with their own maintenance man. So how nice was that? I had one was my little cottage down at the campgrounds, and of course the pipes froze, and then his furnace was giving him problems. And so his father had lived there previously, and the father and stepmother had bought a house. And so they wanted to know, could the two boys still continue to live there? And I said, sure. And so the first call was to their dad. It wasn't to me. And the dad, of course, has a little bit of background in heating and cooling and plumbing. And he'd worked for a company, and he now has his own thing. And he's kind of a handyman, so to speak. And he said, well, I'm here now. He said, do you care if I just go ahead and fix it? And I'm like, twist my arm. Because this was on Christmas Day. And for those of you that remember, I was having an eye problem. Did you guys remember my eye problem story? So I was debating on what was going on with my eye. And so I was just getting ready to head over to an ophthalmologist in Grove City when the call came in. And so he was like, do you care if I fix it? And I'm like, no, just send me a bill. And at that point, you know, it doesn't matter what the bill is at that point. I mean, I knew he was going to be fair, but at the end of the day, it really didn't matter, because what was I going to have to go through to find someone on Christmas Day to go out and fix something like that? And 30 minutes later, he had it fixed, because he has a van, he does handyman work, and he had a lot of the parts and pieces that he needed already in the van. The only thing he didn't have was the piece to fix the furnace. But because he had worked for a heating and cooling company, he called up his buddy, and his buddy had it in his van that still works for the company. And so they just met up. He got the part that he needed, and he just fixed the whole thing, fixed the plumbing, fixed the furnace, fixed it all, got everything back in working order. And I think my bill was $350. So, you know, who knew? The other one was the mobile home that we had purchased down in Hawking County. And, again, they were sitting there watching a movie, the boyfriend, girlfriend who rent the mobile home from us, and they were watching a movie, and he calls and says, the pipe just broke. He said, I heard a pop, pop, pop. And he said, I went out, and he said, it's dripping. He said, I know it's the water line has broken underneath the mobile home. He said, I don't know if the heat tape was working or not. So he said, do you care if I just go ahead and fix it? And again, I'm like, no, go ahead, just send me a bill. And he didn't even want to invoice me. He sent me a receipt, and he had $30 in parts, you know, in the pipe fittings that he needed to fix the leak. And then the heat tape was working, and so he just wrapped it a little tighter. He said he thought it was too spread out, and it just didn't keep up with the temperatures as cold as, because it was like -8. I don't know what it was in Hocking Hills. They sit up on a hill, and the wind blows through there, and it's a mobile home. Even though it's underskirted and heat taped, it didn't work. So anyway, he put the heat tape back on, added some more heat tape, and sent me an invoice for $30. So I kind of took my lead from the first guy, who charged me like $350. And so I just sent this guy $350 and said, thanks for fixing it on Christmas Day. So I ended up, you know, what, $700 total on those two fixes. So there you go. Now, on the same token, the mobile home in Hocking Hills, that also was the one where we just drilled the well. And our worry was the water line coming out of the ground up to the mobile home would freeze. And of course, Mark did add heat tape to that already, and it was fine. So that one didn't freeze. But the water has a, it's real heavy in iron. And so she sent me a picture, her basin in the bathroom, her wash basin in the bathroom, sink basin was turning red, and she could clean it out, but she said over time it'll probably stain it if she didn't stay on top of it and keep it bleached out. So we immediately got on the horn, which we kind of knew was coming, and we you know, we'd had the water tested and we were waiting for some quotes, but folks were kind of dragging their feet. I don't know, maybe staffing was low over the holidays or whatever, but anyhow, we did get a hold of I forget the company name now, but anyway, they came out, and $4,000 later, we have a whole iron out system in the mobile home, and the water is wonderful, and they're happy, and we're happy. And so that whole project, I think, is done. So there you have it. So right now, Mark has decided to circle back around and work on our house. And you didn't hear this from me, but he's just a hint attention deficit. And so he starts working, and then he's like, oh, maybe I'll work on this over here, or maybe I'll work on this over here. And so I have like three projects going all at the same time in various stages of construction in my house right now. And so you guys get that, you know, where you're working on it as you're living in it. So, and that's okay with me. I get it too. And so Mark has been trying it for the last hour to, cause he's moving my washer and dryer and adding a second washer and dryer. So now for the guest house, I'll have two, and they're the front load, you know, where you can stack them. And so he's even relocating the first set, adding a second set. And so now he has to run all new dryer ductwork for those two dryers where he's moving them to. And he's managed to cut through the cement block. He's managed to cut through walls. He's managed to cut through stucco. He's managed to cut through the old lath. But now he's run into some sort of a metal barrier that he's trying. And he's like, what is, and you know, these old houses, you don't know what's buried in these walls. So he ran into a metal barrier somewhere there. And so now we always knew our house was built like a fort. You can't hear a car go by outside, can't hear it at all. And so we wondered what these walls were made of. But anyway, yeah. So now he's trying to cut through that. So that's our biggest hurdle right now, is trying to get the ductwork through for the dryer. And gosh, it's 40 degrees outside, it my phone tells me. So it's not like -9 at least. But anyway, he's outside, he's been out and in and out trying to get that done. So that's my biggest chore. So tell us about your biggest battles over the holidays. How did it go? I know you were in Hawaii. So how did all of that go? How did you get it fixed? And what is still your biggest hurdle?
Well, quickly about the circling back to the dryer vent. I put in a new, this was actually an exhaust fan for the bathroom, which is actually in the basement in our house. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have quite that much to go through. Mine only went through wood, but where I chose to put it through, I thought I was just going through a couple of the, I can't think of the board, right? Goes on the outside of the joist right now. I can't think what the name of it, but it ended up, I went through 8 inches of, of like 2x6s all laminated together to get through to the outside.
So you're talking, because it's in the basement, it's where the house, and the house sits on.
So it sits on a brick foundation. So I was going between the brick foundation and the floor above. So I thought, you know, that would have been a void with just, you know, basically the outer wall. But for whatever reason, the spot I was in was 8 inches thick of solid 2x6 boards all put together.
So how did you get through all that?
Well, it was with a hole saw. So I would go basically 2.5 inches deep, and then I'd take a long screwdriver, stick it in there, pick out the wood that I cut, go another 2.5 inches, and just did that all the way through.
But was your the hole driller deep enough to go through 8 holes, or did you have to go outside and come the other direction?
I did have to go. So I did get a very long pilot bit that I could drill a hole all the way through. So then I was able to attack it from both sides. So I was never like trying to get my drill to go the full 8 inches from one direction.
Well, that's what Mark's doing now with our dryer vent, is he's attacking it from both sides, trying to get it through there. And yeah, I get it. Yeah. He said he had no idea. And he still doesn't know what the metal is. At least you didn't run into metal in the end of your
Yeah, that's crazy. But that you're right, crazy. The old houses are nothing but surprises.
I know, but you know what? Doesn't it make you feel good that you know that that's that plate board that goes around on top of your foundation that's probably clear around your house?
Probably.
Structurally, that's a good thing. It didn't help your project.
No, it didn't make it easy, but it made it interesting. So to Christmas, yes, we were in Hawaii. So this is a good story of how you can handle problems from anywhere. But yeah, I did get several calls. We were dealing with bed bugs. So lining up and actually got the exterminator lined up shortly before we left. So then it was more just following up because they came out and did their inspection and found, yes, there were some bed bugs and gave the tenants the instructions on what they, and the poor tenants, he kind of panicked and just started throwing everything away. He threw out his furniture and he just started chucking things. And yeah, the exterminators came out and said, no, stop. We never recommend anybody throw anything away. It can all be treated. Mm-hmm. So gave them the list of things to do. So they spent the next week, you know, bagging stuff up and cleaning and whatnot. And so I was just following up from Hawaii to make sure that that was progressing. Mm-hmm. And then for this particular one, since it was an infestation, we did tell the tenants that they were responsible for the cost of the treatment. I think it came to just shy of $600. They are a Section 8 tenant, so they don't have a lot of cash. So our advisory board, which I think for this particular one might have just been the two of us, but
I get it.
Our advisory board did approve a 12-month same as cash. So we just tacked on one twelfth of that to their rent for the next year.
Okay. And so what that does, which is a good solution, because now that makes them responsible. And they're going to be more careful as to what happens. Now, I had a tenant who moved in. We had just put $10,000, rehabbed the entire downstairs. The upstairs unit was fine. We always have our units checked. And of course, it was bug-free when each of them moved in. And so when the downstairs tenant moved in, they called and said, we saw a bed bug on our couch. And I'm like, have you ever had bed bugs before? And they said, no, we just got the couch from... what is it? The rent a place, the rent a center. And I'm like, really? I'm thinking, oh boy. And they said, yeah. And we called them and asked them if, you know, if we could return it, that we saw some bed bugs on it. And they said, no, that they treat the furniture in between when somebody's had it. And that no, that they would send someone out to treat it, but they would not allow them to return it because they were under contract to keep it. And so I said, well, I said, you know, and again, like ours was a young couple. They didn't have a lot of cash. They had just gotten moved, paid all their deposits, got everything in, got the utilities on and this and went and rented this furniture. And now they saw a couple of bed bugs. So I had my go out and my advisory board recommended that we just go ahead and do the first time treatment. But not only is it the advisory board's decision, but it's in my lease that any type of bed bugs, mice, anything like that, that will do the first treatment.
Okay.
And we'll pay for it. And it's right in an amendment right to the lease that we'll do the first treatment and any treatment after that then is up to the tenant. And so at that point, we went out and had it inspected in the only place they inspected the entire unit, both up and down, both units. And they only found the bed bugs on this couch.
Wow.
They didn't find them anywhere else in the unit or anywhere else upstairs. And so, and of course we did this, the three series, you know, it was all included in one price and the guy would come three times and treat. And he said, cause you know, the bed bugs lay eggs and then you know, it's hard. That's why they're so hard to get rid of. And so he did a series of three treatments and that was all included in the first round. And so we paid for that. And then what I did is I recommended that the tenants actually have, I don't know if it comes, if it's 3 gallon or 5 gallon, but it's from Home Depot or Lowe's. And when you look at the ingredients in the bed bug spray, I think it's through Ortho. It's the same ingredients that the professionals are using, but just not quite as strong. But it's the same stuff that the professionals are using as far as the ingredients that's in it. And so I just recommended that they do a monthly treatment of their own.
Yeah.
And that, because when you have a multi-unit, you know, and it doesn't have to be a multi-unit. I mean, you've got kids in school that, you know, throw their book bags all over the place and on the bus, and they go to a friend's house and all their coats are in a pile. And remember when we used to have, you know, a get together and we'd go put everybody's coat on our bed? Remember doing that? Yeah, I've done that. I'm like, oh, here, I'll take your coat, you know, a Christmas party. And, you know, now you got this big pile of coats on the bed. You know, how scary is that these days when you think about, you know, bed bugs? But anyway, at that point, I told him, I said, because it's a multi-unit and you can't control what the neighbors do. I mean, you know, there's teenagers and they're in and out of school and friends and coats and book bags. And then even these two kids, you know, they're young adults, but they work in a warehouse environment. And as soon as they go in, they throw their coats on the boxes in the warehouse and then they work all day and then they go get their coats and come home. And it's a known fact that a lot of times, these infestations come in these cardboard boxes and they're shipped in. And so now they're throwing their coats there and then they're bringing their coats home and throwing it on their bed or on their couch or wherever. And so it's so easy to pick up something like that. And so I just recommended that they go to Lowe's or Home Depot. It's like $34 or less. I think a smaller container is $24, but for around, you know, $30, you can buy a container and it probably will go 6 months or more if you treat once a month. And so that's what I recommend to my tenants. And so that's what several of them are doing. And especially this couple, because it kind of freaked them out, you know, like your guy, they didn't throw anything out. They wanted to throw that couch out, but they couldn't afford to. But anyway, that's what they do. And so I take my own advice because I run a guest house and you can imagine, you know, when I've got guests coming in from all over and the first thing they do is, you know, you get on a plane and all that luggage gets thrown in the baggage compartment all together in one big pile. And, you know, and then the guest retrieves it at baggage claims and brings it into my house and puts it on the bed.
So what's this stuff called again?
It's just a bed bug spray.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just bed bug spray. And it comes in different spray. There's a smaller container where you have to squeeze mm-hmm. the handle to spray it. And that gets old. So I bought the one where you can kind of pump it. And then when you spray it, it's just a steady spray. Sure. And then you can change the nozzle to be a wider, thinner spray or a more narrow, stronger spray, and you can change it. And so what I do is once a month, the day before, cause I've got a gal that comes in and deep cleans for all the bed and breakfast rooms. She does like baseboards and the fans and the windows. And, you know, I keep it up all month long. You know, I'll vacuum between each guest and I'll dust between each guest and make the beds and sanitize the bathroom. But she comes in and does the nooks and crannies. You know, she'll do the baseboards and the fans and the windows and all the stuff that I don't do regularly. And so I wait until she's done because I don't want her to clean up the spray I just put on. So I wait till she's done. And then I go through and I, because I've got all my mattresses in a zipper bag. Mm-hmm. And I just bought them off of Amazon. So all my mattresses are inside a zipper bag, but I go through and spray right between the mattress and the box springs where the mattress and the box springs comes mm-hmm. together right in that crack. And I spray all around the bed there on all the beds. And then I lightly spray around all the baseboards. And I do that once a month and I choose a day that, you know, I kind of block the rooms off so I don't have guests because I want that to totally dry before everybody comes in. And so I do that spray and I usually choose a day that I'm going to be out at a networking event. So I then can even leave the house once I spray it because they say it's safe once it's dry, but you shouldn't breathe it or have your pets in it or, you know, set anything in it or touch, you know, get your hands in it while it's wet.
So and it's just, it doesn't leave any marks, just dries. Nope. And just,
Yep. Right. I'll sometimes spray the drapes, you know, because my drapes come down onto the floors. And so I'll maybe pull the drape out and spray up behind the drape in the folds of the drape. I'll do that and around the beds and around the baseboards. So again, nothing, you know, I don't get crazy with it, but it's enough that, you know, you can kind of, it has a hint of a scent. And so you can tell, you can smell it, but once it dries, you can't smell it at all. Nice. And I don't want to be carrying around, you know, my 5 gallon with says bed bugs on it when guests are here. So, so I mark the rooms off. I do that once a month. And then because the laundry is done in our master suite is where the washers and dryers are. I also treat our bed just in case, you know, because I've carried laundry back. Now I don't throw any dirty laundry on our bed. I don't throw any dirty laundry even on our floor. It's all in a basket and it goes directly. And I take it straight from the room to the washer. So it's not even sitting in the master suite while it's still dirty. I'll tear the beds up, as I say, you know, take the linens off, and I'll have a pile of sheets and a pile of comforters and a pile of towels. And I leave all of that in the guest room. And I'll just go get one load and go straight to the washer, right. Dryer. And then it might go on my bed to fold once it's been washed and dried. But then I'll go and get another load off of the guest bed and right into the washer. So it doesn't sit around in the master suite. And again, all of that is designed, you know, to not spread the cheer just in case. And I'm just trying to have precautions, you know. Sure. But then again, when I treat the guest rooms, I treat our room too. And I treat the parlor, you know, I'll lightly do, you know, the furniture where people, you know, has been hanging out. And so not only is it a protection for us as a family that lives here, but it's a protection to the guest as they come and go. Oh, and so I would hope that most of the major hotels have some sort of a routine that they're doing like that.
I'm thinking that, you know, it's great that they have chemicals again, because when bed bugs first became a big problem, what was that? It was quite a while ago now, but it was like right after they outlawed what everybody was using, because bed bugs was all but gone. And then they outlawed some common chemical treatment, and suddenly we had no way to treat them except for heat.
Right. Now, the professionals will tell you that the bed bugs will sometimes get immune to a particular brand or chemical. And so they say that one of the things that you should do is switch up what you're using and not use the same thing. Now, I've used the Ortho, but I'm not even through my first 5 gallon yet, because when you're just spraying it lightly, it lasts forever. And so, you know, but I keep the bottle of it back in the owner's suite. I don't leave it sit out where any of the guests can see that I have a container that says bed bugs on it.
Yeah, at this point, you don't even know if you've ever killed a bed bug with it, right? I mean,
I don't, but I've never had a complaint. We've never seen one. And I did talk with the professionals before I started doing this, and that was their recommendation. They said, you can pay us to come in, you know, once a month, just as a precaution. They said, we do a lot of hotels as a precaution. They said, and then if you do see one, you know, like if a guest, you know, left some hitchhikers for you, they said, call us and we'll do an extra spray, you know, in between. Mm-hmm. They said, but what's going to happen is if you do this monthly, it's supposed to last several weeks, like 8 weeks. And so I'm actually spraying every 4. So they said, what's going to happen is it still is activated. The bed bug, it'll still kill the bed bugs. Okay. Even if you don't spray right when you see one. If you have sprayed within the last 8 weeks, it'll still get them.
Nice.
So anyway, I've discovered, and then I said, okay, but you know, those stink bugs, because we've got window air units in our windows, because we want the guests to be able to make it whatever temperature they want. And in these old houses that the air doesn't circulate like the new houses. And so we've added those air units in each room. And sometimes those stink bugs will come in around those air units because there's just enough of a gap that they can get in there, or those little ladybugs. And so my bed bug guy, my exterminator that I first called to ask about all this, he said, do a little swish of your spray on your windowsills. He said, and it'll, he said, if it kills bed bugs, it'll kill. He said, it'll keep everything out. I haven't had to worry about a stink bug or a ladybug since I started doing that. He said, they won't come in because they don't like it.
Well, good. Good to know.
He said, so it's a nice barrier for your windowsills.
I'll have to invest in some of that. Cause yeah, I mean, the stink bugs are, they're so big, but
I know.
My God, they.
And it's like, how did they get in here?
They get in everywhere. I don't know how they do that.
Yeah. So anyway, that's what I'm doing, and it seems to be working. And again, I don't spray on the top of the mattresses or any place where folks would be sleeping or whatever. I spray between the mattress and the box springs because my mattresses are pillow tops, so I'm not flipping. Right. So I spray down kind of like under the mattress and on top of the box springs. And the other place, bed bugs like to hide, according to my guy. So he said another thing is up underneath the box springs. He said some of those older wood box springs have that mesh on the bottom to try to make it look nice. Well, who sees it unless you're crawling under the bed? So he said he likes to recommend to take that mesh off of there. Because it's usually just stapled on, and there's sections of it, you know, where bed bugs could crawl back through there. And he said, just get that off of there. And he said, and just put your bed up against the wall. And he said, and give the underside of that box springs a really good spray a couple times a year.
Makes sense. No, we don't have any guest houses or short-term rentals or anything. It sounds like very good advice. And if we ever do get one, definitely take all of that into consideration and perhaps start our own little preventative maintenance on that. As far as though, you know, getting it and spraying around the baseboards, it sounds like a good thing just for flipping a regular apartment.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And especially when you have multi-units, because again, if you get one tenant that has a problem for whatever reason, you know, then your whole building has it automatically over time. Yeah.
So we, what was I about to say? Oh yeah, you mentioned your lease and your one. Our lease actually doesn't promise that we will do any treatments, but I think it's within the first 30 days. So we'll take care of anything that's found within their first 30 days. After that, infestations are their responsibilities.
Okay.
Now we've treated, and actually in the same house, in the spring, they were getting bad ants, and it was getting it as a duplex, and both units were getting it. So we went ahead and paid to have the ants treated. I know we used to live kind of in the same area, and every spring, it's those teeny tiny little ones. Mm-hmm. Every spring,
we used to get those in Sandusky.
I would be fighting with them in our house.
Yeah. So.
I didn't figure that was anything they were doing. I just know that's the area.
Yeah, in Sandusky, we never even cooked there because we would always go out to dinner when we were up there, because it's like, no, we're on a break. We're not cooking. We're going out. And so I knew it wasn't that, you know, we left crumbs or anything around. And but right by my sliding door, the whole thing, I mean, it was just all these ants. I'm like, where in the world? And why are they all congregating right there? So yeah, we exterminated that too. Cute side note, I went over to Bowling Balls when Bowling Balls hardware was here in business in Canal Winchester, and it was an old time hardware store. We loved it. And we would always shop at Bowling Balls, and the guy was quite a comedian. And I went in there and said, I'm having problems with ants. And he goes, yeah, I have a problem with my aunt too. He said, she's always wanting me to eat better. And I'm like, I need something to kill ants. And he goes, no, you don't want to kill her. He said, I think that's illegal. And I'm like, okay, I just need to get a spray and get out of here and stop being a comedian. But it was pretty funny. Yeah. He was having trouble with his aunt too. But anyway, we got rid of them in Sandusky, but again, we had to kind of spray to keep them at bay. And then when we bought the first single wide down in Zephyr Hills in Florida, our patio, you know how the cement will crack or whatever. And all of a sudden we'd be gone for a couple of weeks, and then we'd go back down and all these little ant hills all in all the cracks, just loaded with ants. And so we bought that. If you remember the story, the guy had gone in, he was elderly and had gone into assisted living or nursing care or whatever, and the family decided to sell the mobile home. And so they took his personal stuff out and we got it fully furnished. So lo and behold, I opened up underneath the kitchen sink and there was like 10 bottles of ant spray. And I thought, he's had this problem before.
No, it's the same. Like I said, when we were living down there, it was every spring. And I mean, I get them. I get the spray. I treat around the foundation of the house and get, you know, stuff for exterior and get some spray for interior and then put out some traps. And it would take a couple of weeks, but then they'd be gone. But by God, if they wouldn't be back again next spring.
So you kind of know that that's, you're going to have to battle that every spring with.
Yeah, I'm a bit concerned about that. Yeah, I think I might hear about it again here in a couple of months.
Okay. So you might just put that on your maintenance routine. You know, like if you go through and change filters and batteries and all of that, you might just put that on your maintenance routine. And I'm a firm believer in systems. That way, if later on you want to hand that off to someone, you can just say this property gets treated every March or whatever. Whenever the season is.
Camp season.
I don't want to pay for that though, because that property is not really a good cash flowing property. And it has other problems that David will tell you about in a minute.
Well, can you add that on to just buy something from Lowe's or Home Depot and do it yourself? Can you buy something that's strong enough to take care of it instead of calling an exterminator?
Well, I'm sure I could go down and do kind of the same thing I used to do at
our own house.
But I don't want to.
Yeah. See, at the end of the day, you have to decide, you know, it's either time or money, you know?
Yeah,
right.
Either I'm going to take the time or I'm going to spend the money. Well, because either way, you're going to get the call.
We did treat for ourselves every year, and it cut back on the number of ants, but it didn't get rid of all of them. So it'll just be another call like, hey, we still have some.
Well, and again, what I was able to do in my duplex is that I was able to get my tenants to go start buying the bed bug spray and treat. I just said, here's what the advisory board recommends. And we recommend that you do it monthly.
That's good. We'll see. We have to get them back out for the ants again. I'll see if I can't get some professional recommendation for how to kind of ongoing maintenance and then put that onto the tenants.
Here's my suggestion. You might send them a letter in February that says it's that time of year that, you know, this problem crops up and here is the advisory board's recommendation on what you can do to handle that.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
It is.
So that way you can kind of make it like that's just part of your reminder letter.
Good idea.
So that way when it happens, they'll say, I got a letter on what I'm supposed to do about that. Anyway, so go ahead. So what else is going on?
So then same property, and this is we received the first call on this actually while we were down there in Hawaii. So the sewer backed up again. So this one has had sewer problems actually literally before we bought it. So we held off on actually buying because there had been a problem discovered where it taps into the main line for the city. And so we waited until the previous owner actually got that taken care of before we actually took possession of the property. And it so worked for about 6 months, and then we got our first call. There's gravel that keeps accumulating in the pipe. So about 6 months ago, we actually had the floor. They determined that the pipe was broken underneath the basement floor. And so the gravel that goes underneath the concrete was getting into it. So they actually jackhammered up the basement floor and replaced some pipe. Got it all together, looks nice, worked for about 6 months, and get the next call, and it's just sewage bubbling up into the basement again. So this time, got the pipe works went out, and ran the snake, ran a camera, found that it was 7/8 of the way full of gravel. So we ran his snake back and forth a little bit, tried to knock that down to get things so it would flow, but now their thinking is that it's, the pipe is, again, it's broken, but it's on the bottom side. So as they run their camera through, you know, they're going over the gravel, looking at the top of the pipe, which looks good, but they think
normally the bottom it collapses crushed. From the top.
Yeah. So they think it's actually broken on the bottom, but of course now it's outside underneath the driveway. And I think at this point it'll be down
it
a
paved,
good
paved driveway or
it is
concrete driveway.
Yeah. So this will be down a good 7-8 feet underneath the driveway. So we're waiting because we've been fighting it for so long. We've been fighting it for about 2 years. Just fast pipe works to just work up a plan. How are we going to fix this so that it works the way it's supposed to for, you know, the amount of time you expect it to? I know they can't make it work forever, but I shouldn't be calling it back out every 6 months.
Can they bypass that?
I don't know.
We're waiting on our quote to see what they come up with.
Yeah.
Okay, because what he did for me is at my 57 building right here on Waterloo Street here in Canal Winchester where the salon was, we had to have a handicap ramp. And we put a fair amount of money and Mark did all the work and he built this handicap ramp. Well, I ended up having a leak underground and it was right underneath the ramp. And so Pipeworks came out and he said, we're going to have to take the ramp off to dig it out, to fix it. And then he said, we don't build ramps. So he said, you'll have to then pay somebody to put your handicap ramp back. Well, part of ADA says we can't be open without the ramp.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, is there any other suggestions? And he said, I could reroute the entire sewer pipe. He said, you're okay at the street where we tap in. And he said, and you're okay inside your building. He said, but as soon as it leaves your building, he said, that's where the problem is, which runs clear under your ramp. And so I said, well, what are my other options? And he said, are you ever going to finish the basement? And I said, oh, no, because it's real low and it's all full of all the ductwork and the hot water tank and furnace and everything. Mm-hmm. I said, it's a commercial building and we'll never finish the basement. And he said, if you don't mind, he said, I can run the sewer inside the basement and leave the wall at a different place. He said, and then go straight to where it taps into the city and just bypass the whole ramp. And I said, let's do that. And that's what they ended up doing.
We did pretty much exactly that same thing at a different property, but it was having a problem kind of right. It was actually right before it left the, right as it was going through the wall, but where it went out originally was underneath the side porch. No, it's just a little stoop. It's not a full porch. And they built a little ramp over top of it. And he was saying, you know, I have to take the ramp off and then take out the concrete that used to be the little stoop. And so, but in the end, yeah, we just ran a new pipe 3 feet down the wall, bored no hole, and just left that whole porch thing alone.
So with the property you're talking about now, is it a finished basement?
No.
Is there a way that you can exit your basement somewhere else and go straight to the city hookup and bypass the whole driveway?
Guess I'll have to talk to Pipeworks about that one. So it's got a main stack that just kind of comes straight down and it goes down into the floor. It doesn't actually exit the wall. So the main stack goes into the floor, but I mean, it could turn.
Well, what he did for mine did too. And that's where it went out and that's where the problem was. So what he did for mine is he cut the stack off higher and put an elbow on the stack and brought the stack over to exit the wall in a different place because it has to go downhill.
Sure.
Well, we'll see what they say.
I have no idea.
Now, is a tenant still, is a tenant in there now?
Yes.
And how many people?
Well, it's this is an up down, so we got a single mom and two kids upstairs, and then a couple, and who knows how many of their adult children will be living there at any one time.
Okay.
Supposedly none of them are living there, but there's almost always one of them there.
I get it. So
at least at the minimum, there's four people there every day.
Now, is it working at all? I mean, can they?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
They managed to kind of smooth the gravel back out. So that it's half open. It's probably a 4-inch line where the problem is. So it's half open. So that'll keep us going for
6 months.
Probably 6 months. Yeah, that seems to be the magic number. Give us time to figure out what we're going to do.
Okay. So you're just waiting for some prices now to come in from Pipeworks to see what their solutions are.
Yeah, essentially.
Okay. Well, they seem to be pretty good at coming up with solutions to try to keep the price down. At least they have for me.
We like them, but this is going to be a big job no matter what. So even if they're being nice to us, it's still going to be pricey.
Yeah. My campground property, again, it started backing up. And so they ran a camera and realized that the campground had planted a tree right through the sewer line where it connected into the city, up inside the campgrounds. And so, I got a hold of the campgrounds and I, of course I hate to take down a perfectly good tree. And so there was the same solution. I said, can we leave the bathroom and instead of coming out the back of the cottage right through that tree, can we come out the side of the cottage because there's a little bit of a yard there and then connect it into the city? And Pipeworks said, that's what we're going to recommend. And so the campground said, it's our tree, so we'll take care of it. I'm like, okay. And so that's what the Pipeworks worked with the campgrounds, and that's what they did. They rerouted it out of a totally different spot.
I'd love to have somebody to blame for this one, but I don't think I'm going to get anybody to pay for it.
No, but you might be able to reduce your cost by just coming out of the house at a different spot. Because once you get under that driveway, now you've got to redo the driveway.
Right.
But the
driveway goes almost all the way up to the house.
Yeah.
And the upstairs stairs go over top of the little bit that's not paved.
But but the main line that we're tapping into is underneath the middle of the street. So
where does that come out in your yard compared to where it comes out in your house? That's the question, is can you reroute where it comes out of your house to connect where it's already tapped into the street? Because you've determined the problem is not where the tap into the street is. The problem is more up in under your driveway.
Yeah, but so it seems to go kind of at an angle. I mean, it's hard to describe. It seems to go at an angle through the house and then it goes out. It appears literally right under where the curb break is. So it's underneath something. It's underneath our driveway. It's underneath our floor. It's underneath something all the way from the street to that main stack. I don't know how much. I mean, we'll talk to Pipeworks, certainly. Are there any other creative solutions we can come up with here to try to get it into a better spot? Because it sounds like we're going to have to replace pretty much everything from almost the tie-in, almost the tap to the city, to the little piece they already replaced under the floor. So we'll see, is there an opportunity to be creative here and just, run something new? But I don't know how much we'll say. But yep, we'll find out. That's all still the discussion to be had. Right now they're working. They can flush their toilets, so the immediate emergency is abated.
What kind of cost are we talking? Do you know? Or do you even know what to guess?
I'm guessing somewhere in the $7,000 range.
Ouch.
Ouch. Or more, depending on where it is and what happens.
Ouch, ouch, ouch.
Yeah.
Now, again, Mark will tell you, and we talked about this with Adrian when he had his problem, is, you know, digging a ditch is just all labor, and that's where that cost comes. Laying that pipe is not rocket science, and digging a ditch isn't rocket science. It's just on how much, you know, it goes back to that time or money, how much of that, because it probably doesn't need to be 7 feet deep. I don't imagine it's 7 feet deep where it connects into the city. It's probably not 7 feet deep where it comes out of your house.
Well, it's coming out of the house. So my 7 feet is just based on the fact that it's coming out already from under the floor. So that might not be, I guess, you know, that these, while the basement is a good 7 feet, there probably are 2 feet that's still above grade. So you're right. It's probably more like 5.5 feet down, but that's just based on where the house is. And then at some point it does slope down further to go towards the city. So which I can't tell you.
Yeah.
I can't.
But again, at the end of the day, you're talking about digging a ditch and laying plastic pipe. None of those are rocket science, but it just is how hard you want to work at it, or what do you want to pay for, or, you know. And again, time and money, that's your two choices.
Yeah. On this one, especially since it's rented. I mean, if it were something where I was doing some major renovation, like, you know, when we redid the little efficiency apartment behind us, that one was kind of my project. So it took a while, and eventually the boss cracked the whip and I had to speed up and get it done. But I had the luxury of doing it at my own pace for the most
part.
Those
darn bosses, they just get away all the time, don't they?
They do.
I love it.
This one, though, has already been an inconvenience for the tenant multiple times, so it would be nice just to get the professionals in there to get it done as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
Yep. I know. I just hate spending $7,000.
Me too.
I get it. Sometimes you have to just bite the bullet and say, just get it off the list. We had a gas line that started leaking at the big, one of the nicer, you know, split level, 4-bedroom, 3-acre properties that I have on Lycopolis Road. And it had, it has natural gas, but the natural gas line was leaking. And so they shut the gas off. Mm-hmm. And this was in the middle of winter. And this house has boiler heat where the hot water line runs all the way around the baseboards in all the rooms. And so if you have a water line break, the whole house gets trashed. And so we didn't want to go without heat. So we called Pipeworks because they also do gas line repairs. And they came, and again, this was a holiday weekend. I'm thinking this was like New Year's Eve or something, not this year, but a year ago. And they came out and they fixed it enough to get the boiler going. But he said, you've got 3 other leaks, he said, that have nothing to do with your heat. And he says, we're just going to turn those off and come back when we're not charging you holiday time. He said, so we're just going to work long enough to get the heat on, to get the boiler on. I said, okay. So they're really good at trying to do their best to keep from charging you more money. I mean, he could have just said, hey, we'll fix it. We're getting paid. What do we care? But he said, but he called and he said, if it's okay with you, he said, it's okay with your tenants. We're here now. And they said that they're good with that. And he said, if you're good with that, he said, we'll just come back next week, you know, on work time, on our regular rate, and finish the leaks. And I said, that's perfect. I just want to make sure they're happy. So it worked out, but it was still a big chunk. But you know, what are you going to do? You know, I mean, it's not safe. And we had to have heat in the house, and it wasn't safe to leave the gas on without those lines being fixed. So,
well, if it's cheap to own property, then, you know, we wouldn't have renters. Everybody would own.
This is true. But boy, oh boy, you hate to get $7,000 ahead just to turn around and write a check for $7,000.
Yeah.
Yep. I get it.
Right now, this property helps us on taxes, and hopefully over time appreciates. It is not cash flowing.
So how close is it to cash flowing?
Well, if it didn't have all these maintenance issues, it would cash flow probably only less than $100 a door for this particular one. I don't even think it's that. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Wow, but at $7,000, and if you just divide that by 12, that's $583 a month. Ouch.
Yeah, no. This is, it won't pay us back through rent, not anytime soon, for this repair.
But it needs done, so what are you going to do?
I know. I mean, even if you could break even, it, at least you would feel like your tenants are buying you a house. But when you have to, you know, add more money. So you've got two units in there?
Yes.
So at best, you're cash flowing $200 a month. Wow. Yeah, you'd have to get down, your repair would have to be under $3,000 or better to break even in the next 12 months.
On average, we lose, it looks like $64 a month because of the repairs.
Currently, that's without counting this one.
Yep. Yes, because we had been out for sewer repairs every 6 months since we bought it.
Okay. So again, this might take care of it once and for all, once you do this. Do you have any options of like, do you have room on a credit card
to do? We have a line of credit.
Yeah.
But then do you have a credit card offer where you get a 0%?
We do have a credit card that periodically does that. I think they're offer right now though is 3.9% and our line of credit is 5%. So,
but unfortunately, Pipeworks has started passing the credit card fees on. They no longer accept credit cards.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, yeah, it doesn't matter how you pay them. I'm just saying that once you've spent the money, how can, you know, if you can, even if you do and I don't know if you could do a cash advancement. I've done that before. I've done a cash advancement on one card put it into my bank account and take care of the bills. And then now I owe that card that balance, but then I've transferred that balance over to a card that has a 0% for 24 months.
Right.
And it's basically like having free money for 24 months. And so if I divide that by 24, that brings it down to $291, which a month, which would be a little closer to you breaking even. You still wouldn't break even, but it would be closer than you spending $500-$600 a month for 12 months to try to recoup your loss.
And well, we gotta get a final bill and figure out what your final estimate anyway. Figure out when he's done. We'll definitely look for opportunities to make it cheap, spread the payments out.
If there's any way that you can use someone else's money for free for 24 months, that's always the better option.
We have quite a bit of other people's money going for things right now. So yes, totally agree with you because we look for every opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I spread out my big stuff like that. I always try to spread it out on a 0% offer on a credit card. And sometimes I've even gone in and opened a whole new credit card just to get the free 24 months free interest. Right. And I've done that a couple of times. And so somebody goes, oh, but I don't want to have all those credit cards because that hurts your credit. And I'm like, oh, actually it helps your credit, especially if you don't use them and rack them up, because now you've got this overall credit limit and you're only using like, you know, maybe 20 or 30% of it. And it actually boosts your credit score, which then helps when you want to buy another property. It helps keep your interest rates down. So there's all kinds of strategies there. So I'll just toss that out as an option to try to keep it to where at least the closer you can get to the break-even point monthly, then at least your tenants are buying you a property as it appreciates and where they are currently in their rent. At least it's not taking out of your cash. And hopefully it won't be 7,000. hopefully they'll have a solution where maybe they can reroute that whole drain. And
well, we will definitely see what they come up with.
Yeah. It's the waiting game is what gets you, because you're like, well, I don't know. Maybe it's me. I like to have all my ducks like all, you know. I don't like those open-ended things. I had a guy just recently, I had a tree was starting to die. But how do you tell this time of year with all the leaves gone? I can drive by and look at a tree and I'm like, I don't know if it's dead or if it's just the leaves are off of it right now. And so I called a tree guy and I said, I think this wood tree is dying. I can't tell. And he goes, I can tell. So he called me up and he was like, yep. He said, it's not totally dead. He said, you probably did see some leaves on it last year, but he said within the next year or so, he said it'll be totally gone. And I said, I'm afraid it's going to fall, you know, with snow and ice and all of that. And it's in the right of way over in Asheville between the sidewalk and the street. And in Asheville, the landowner is responsible. In Canal Winchester, the city takes care of those trees. But in Asheville, the city goes, nope, we don't, that's your tree when you bought that property. And I said, but I didn't plant the tree. And they said, sorry, when you got the property, it's your problem. So we already cut one tree down that had died there. Now the second, and the whole street. What was the trees that were dying that everybody said? Was it the birch trees? I forget what it was. That wasn't birch. Ash. And so I don't know my trees. But anyhow, that whole street, they've lost their trees. And this was one of the last ones still standing. And my tree guy said, it needs to come down. He said, by next year at this time, it'll be falling down. And people park all along there. And I thought, I don't want to be the one to have a tree limb fall on a car with somebody sitting in the car or even damaging a car, but let alone somebody getting hurt. So I said, go ahead and take it down. So out comes my convenience checks and spread that out. And again, I'm trying to keep that house either cash flowing or at best breaking even. I don't want to go negative if I can help it. And so far, so good.
That would be nice.
I have two of my 24 that are just breaking even because of big repairs like that. But it's only going to do that for 12 to 24 months. And on the first one, I'm almost to the end of my 24 months. And then this one in Asheville, I'm just now starting that 24-month process because of the trees and some other work that we did over there. So anyway, that's the key, is to try to keep them at least breaking even.
Well, certainly that's always the goal. I think we're doing, well, it's the only one that's underwater. Even that one we're house hacking is doing better than even. It's not, since we're occupying one of the four units, it's as a property, it's not a big moneymaker until you factor in that we're not paying rent. So if you include what we would be paying, then this one's doing very, very well.
Well, I think you have to include that. Yeah. That's part of the overall budget. Yeah, that's great. Tammy, did I hear you say the other night that you wanted to buy a camper or a motorhome or something and you wanted to live in the motorhome?
Yep.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I want to travel more. So,
okay.
I think it'd be nice to get a camper or whatever and live in that and rent this thing out.
David, what do you think?
We went to the boat and RV show and started looking around at, you know, so we wanted to get a feel for what would we be comfortable in. Turns out we're not big on roughing it. What we decided on was some pretty good size. So I think we settled on a fifth wheel camper.
Okay.
So, when you move up from just the tow behind to the fifth wheel, that gives them a little bit more weight that they can play with. So since we're looking at this as being something that we're living in full time rather than just something a couple of weekends or a couple of weeks a year, we need it to be a little bit more like a house and a little less like an oversized tent. So
yep, I get it. Now you've got the perfect setup there. If your little cottage there ever goes empty, you could keep that as a home base.
Oh, there you go.
And because my guess is that you would get the, of all your units there, that would be the one that you get the least amount of rent for.
It should be, but I don't think you're correct currently because of some of our inherited tenants. We're trying to get them up to market, but right now they're less than market.
Okay, so in a perfect world, if you were getting market for the one you're in and the other two in the back, then that little cottage virtually could be your least profitable.
Right.
And that could be a nice little home base for you, you know, if you ever wanted to start easy and not be like in the camper 24/7 and have a place to live. And
well, the camper would be significantly larger than that little efficiency.
Okay.
It's well, a master suite with, or a master bedroom with an ensuite bath and a full-size living room and kitchen dining and a half bath.
So where would you park this most of the time? What would be your plan?
So, well, there's all kinds of sites and Facebook groups and things like that to learn more about that, but that would, I mean, our plan would be to park it wherever we're visiting at the time. So go around, learn how to not spend as much time at KOAs because that gets expensive.
Yes.
But the large camper owners who also have a lot of land have started
other land to other campers for a significantly less price than campgrounds charge.
Sometimes even free, depending on, you know, maybe they've got 20 acres that they never touch.
Right.
So it won't come improved. It won't come with, you know, electric and sewer and water hookup. You'll have to, you know, bring your own for those things, but it'd be a place you could spend the night for free.
Yeah.
And then you can always pull into Walmart.
Yep.
We want to travel the U.S.
I love it. Now, funny that you should mention that, because I would love to try what they call camper van life, just in a camper van.
That's funny, because that's how this whole conversation started. I told David I wanted to buy a camper van and just travel the U.S. in a van. And he decided a van full time was too small. So we looked at some slightly bigger, and those were still too small. And now we ended up with this giant one that's like pulling a house behind your truck. But
you have all the comforts, though.
That's right. I figured if that's what it takes to get him to travel with me more, then we'll buy the bigger one.
And the little camper vans aren't cheap.
No, they're not.
So you can.
Of course, I have. Of course, I have Mark, and he would take a cargo van and put a piece of plywood in the back and throw a mattress and say, there's your camper van.
Yeah. Well, we were looking at the ones that were intentionally designed for full time on the road living.
Oh, that's
those are like $100,000.
Starting
at $100,000 for those.
So I looked at a nice, you know, you talk about the true motorhome. Looked at a real nice one of those, very nicely outfitted. It was only $500,000.
Ouch.
That's out of my price range.
So this is one of those, you know, it's basically the big Greyhound bus.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it had, but it, yeah, you know, you go inside and all the fixtures, you know, the stove, the refrigerator, everything is
top of the line.
Top of the line. It's house quality. I mean, it's the same thing you would get for your own home. But yeah, obviously that came at a price that's a little bit out of reach. Even if we could make it work, which I guess technically we could probably do it, we wouldn't want to.
Now, are you comfortable taking your turn driving that, Tammy?
No.
Absolutely not. She's already told me, not a chance.
Nope.
Even the fifth wheel with the truck is probably my responsibility.
I can drive the truck without the fifth wheel on the back, but not with the giant freaking trailer.
Yeah, it sounds pretty big. I love it, though. And it's funny you should mention that, because, you know, I always kind of had that in the back of my head. I was like, oh, I would love to do that. Now, we have a van in Florida we have a Freestar where all the seats fold down. So it turns into like a cargo van. And I told Mark, I said, you know, there's a ton, you know, Florida is a long ways apart from all this, you know, it's a big state. And I mean, even if you drive from west to east coast, you're talking 4 hours. But when you start driving south, especially if you're going to like go all the way down to the Keys or something like that, I mean, it's a lot of driving. And so I told Mark, I said, you know, we could actually use that as a camper and we could, you know, travel all around. And Mark's like, what? And I go, yeah. And he goes, you do know you can get a hotel room for about $50, right?
Not really anymore, can you?
We traveled to South Carolina for Dakota's graduation, and I paid $58 the night going down, and I paid $62 for a night coming back.
All right. I was thinking we used to do $50 a night hotels when we were traveling for kids' sports years ago, but I didn't know I could even find a $50 a night hotel room anymore.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, 58 going down and I think 62 coming back. And they were, you know, they were okay. They were clean and beds and showers and breakfast, you know, it was included in the mornings and, you know, so it was okay. Nice. But I don't know that you would get that in South Beach or in the Keys. No. You're not going to get that. So, yeah.
Oh, you're right. It depends on where you are.
Yeah, this was on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, you know, where all the truckers were pulling off. So, sure. Yeah, so I get it. But anyhow, yeah, I have a little bit of that dream, too. So good.
I used to have that dream and then I gave it up. I was like, yeah, I don't think I want to do that anymore. And now that the kids have moved out, and we've started traveling again, I've decided maybe I do.
Because you know what, it is fun to go places and see all these different things and try all these different restaurants. And we have a ball when we go to Florida. We're on the road all the time when we go down there because we're up to Clearwater. And then we go up to visit our friends in Spring Hill. And then we're over at Orlando. And then what, back in September, October, we went over to Miami. And so, yeah, we have a ball down there. So it's all good.